that, we've got company.
Hello.
Trust me, Hera, I'm excited. This is my excited face.
No, this makes me so happy.
I like you. You don't fit in around here either.
All right, if I tag along?
More the merrier.
Get ready to be impressed.
You ready to be impressed, Tam?
I'm completely ready.
Bright suns, everyone. You're listening to the Geeky Bubble Podcast, where we talk about the Star Wars animated shows from the comfort of our own geeky bubble. I'm your host, Jonah Marie, and with me is the Sid to my Omega, my mom, Maria.
Sid! Today, we're going to discuss the Bad Batch episode, Common Ground.
Common Ground was written by Gursimran Sandhu and directed by Saul Ruiz. So, Common Ground, we have it referring to how former soldiers of the Republic have to work with a, I guess,
former enemy,
former separatist senator, and they have to put aside their differences in order to work with each other. So I thought that was really interesting. And there's also common ground for Hunter and Sid, I guess you could say, because Omega settles their debt to her. And
common ground between Hunter and Omega.
Yeah, common ground between Hunter and Omega as they play Dejarik in hopes of coming to a mutual understanding and agreement with each other.
Yeah.
Oh, and what's really great about this episode, too, is that it was a lot like The Phantom Menace, episode one, because there you have a group of people who are infiltrating a planet in order to help a senator escape from an illegal occupation. So this is very similar in that you have a group of people infiltrating a planet so that they can help a senator escape an illegal occupation. So yeah, I really liked how there was a similarity there between the movie and this episode. Did you have any other thoughts about it, like general thoughts?
I love the artistry of the scenes. Like that sunny but yet misty view against the colors of the trees and the bushes. It was very, very neat. I loved it.
Yeah.
The colors, gray, red, black.
Yeah.
You know, awesome.
I really love the orange and blues because there are movies out there that tend to focus on color palettes, and orange and blue tend to be a great pair to use. And you see a lot of movies using that as their color palette. So when I saw the orange and blues, I thought, oh, this is beautiful. They're doing such cinematic work here.
They are. It's unbelievable. The stills alone, like, I would love to have those paintings.
Yeah, you know? It looks very beautiful. So the planet was Araxes, and I love how we're seeing the perspective of the separatist planets being forced under imperial rule. And it's even mentioned that senators have been pressured, and if they don't follow along, then they get arrested or even worse, which was really interesting and brought up in my mind Ryder Azadi on Lothal, because he ends up getting arrested at one point. I don't think it's around this time, but eventually down the line, he does get arrested. And I just thought that was really great to focus on a senator, because they're the ones who are feeling the brunt of it. Obviously, the people, too. But they're the ones who need to start enforcing it.
Yeah.
And if they don't, then they can potentially die.
Politically speaking, they're the face. They're the ones that are responsible. And in more ways than one, because let's face it, the Empire was the Republic. So the enemy is still the enemy.
Yeah.
And they don't even know it. They think it's a new enemy.
Right. You know, and it's not that they deserve it. You know, it's not that they deserve this unjust occupation, but this is sort of a taste of their own medicine. Because the separatists invaded a lot of planets.
Yep.
And they did it in a sneaky kind of way, especially Dooku, and trying to give them things that they needed so that they fell in line with the separatists. Obviously, Dooku, Grievous, and Sidious were all doing this because they had a bigger plan. Or Sidious had a bigger plan. But some of these other people, like the senator And even people like Mina Bonteri, who we met in Star Wars The Clone Wars, and General Cleave, who we met in the Kanan comics, they believed in what they were fighting for. And they fell for the ruse that Sidious, that Palpatine, you know, was planning behind the scenes. And it's sad because they were fighting for something. They thought they were fighting for their independence from this corrupt republic. And they were right in a way, because the Republic, like you said, does become the Empire. But now they're facing the consequences.
Yeah, because it's like always, be careful what you say and what you do, because it may be done unto you as well.
Right.
Like you may want liberty, but if in wanting liberty, you oppress others, you may end up being oppressed one day.
Yes, this is true. Yeah. And so Raxus we had seen before in the episode Heroes on Both Sides, which was also the 10th episode of its season, just like how this is the 10th episode of The Bad Batch. And in that episode, Ahsoka saw a different side to the war and how good and evil aren't all that clear. Yeah. It's very blurry.
Yeah.
And it challenges her worldview, just like how this episode challenges the Bad Batch's worldviews and their understanding.
Yeah.
You know, at the start of the episode, the senator talks against the Empire, and it reminded me a lot of someone else that we know, Mommy, someone else who we love, and it's Ezra.
Oh, my yeah. God.
Because his words carry...
My boy.
Yeah.
My blue boy.
Because his words carried the same sentiment as what Ezra eventually says in his own transmission.
Yes.
Later on.
No. This is wrong.
It is my duty to act in your best interest. And it is why I can no longer condone this unjust occupation. They wish to intimidate us, to scare us, but we shall not cower at their acts of oppression.
So it's fascinating to see people this early on in the game, especially separatists, former separatists, voicing their thoughts against the Empire, because they were actually against the Republic since the very beginning.
Yeah.
So it's funny to see remnants of the Republics, people like Rex and Bail Organa and Leia Organa, become part of a group alongside the Separatists, because these people are also against the Empire. And I just really love how the tables have turned sort of a way.
Yeah. It's fascinating, because if you think about it, the Separatists were manipulated.
Yes, they were. They were manipulated, yeah.
Wanting to basically start a war against the Republic.
Mm-hmm.
It was all in the master plan,
yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So I just would like to see how many early on caught up to the fact that it was all a ruse.
Mm. Yeah, you don't really see many people talking about it
or
connecting the dots. Yeah.
And I would like to see that, see it early on, not later, but early on.
Yeah.
You know, like, I would like to see somebody say, you know what? Realizing that the Empire is the Republic and it was all a ruse to pin Republic planets against Separatist planets.
So I think a lot of people get that the Republic became the Empire because it was such a widely announced thing that Palpatine did at the Senate at the time, the Republic Senate. But yeah, that would be interesting. And GS-8... is such a loyal droid.
Yeah.
And smart droid.
She was, I'm your client.
Right.
You know, when they came out. Oh, I like you.
Yeah.
Always with those little comments.
Yeah, it's funny because she's also voiced by, I want to say her name is Shian Clifford. And she was in Fleabag with Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who voiced L3 in Solo, A Star Wars Story.
Mm-hmm.
So you have L3 and GS-8, and I like to think that they know each other and that they're best friends. And GS, I think it means Gersum Ron Sandu, who's the writer of this episode.
Oh.
So it just came to me while writing up the notes, and I thought, oh, maybe GS stands for the writer's name. And then Senator Avi Singh is voiced by Alexander Siddig from...
Dr. Bashir.
Yeah, from Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And I thought that was so cool because his voice sounded really familiar in watching the episode. And I didn't know who it was until I got to the credits at the end. And I thought, oh my God, it's Dr. Bashir. And I also really love his monocle.
Right?
Yeah.
I love the monocle against the little beard and thing, you know, the face. It was so, so well done.
Yeah, his design. I really liked his hat too.
Yeah.
And his hat, I spent time yesterday Googling this because I thought, where have I seen a similar hat like that before? And it wasn't until I typed in, okay, it has to do something with nutcrackers, the nutcracker design, the soldier uniform. And I was looking at some German nutcracker soldier designs, and they have a similar like hat. And I wonder whether that was the inspiration.
The moment I saw him, I envisioned Nutcracker.
Right?
Like toy soldier.
Yeah. Yeah, like a toy soldier. Yeah, I guess there's more like a puppet, in essentially, which is what they wanted.
And which is what he was saying, like, am I supposed to become a puppet for them?
Right, exactly. Yeah, so I thought that was really neat. And Raxus also showed up in the novel Dark Disciple, which was a really great part of the story, too, because they being Ventress and Quinlan Vos, they go to Raxus to confront Dooku, and then Dooku ends up kidnapping Quinlan Vos, and I remember freaking out because I thought, oh no, they're separated, what's going to happen now? So that was really cool, and I hope we get to see the animated version of that and go back to Raxus through Quinlan Vos and Asajj Ventress. So here's hoping one day. So let's move into how the Bad Batch get this mission. So it's interesting to see Omega, how she isn't fazed by the fact that she had been kidnapped by a bounty hunter in a previous episode. She was told the truth about why the Kaminoans want her, but she seems to be doing okay. She seems to be a very resilient kind of a person. But do you think the promise that Hunter made her in the previous episode is playing a role in her being okay?
Yes. Most definitely. It is a love. It is a father-daughter love.
Mm.
She has such admiration and love and affection for Hunter. She believes in Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And if Hunter says that she's gonna be okay, she's gonna be okay.
Right. Yeah. At first I thought she might be hiding it, but I think she just really has a lot of confidence in Hunter and the Bad Batch.
Yes.
Yeah. And at one point, Hunter tells Wrecker that the kid needs a break.
So, when's our next mission?
With two bounty hunters after you, it'd be wise to keep a low profile.
Tech's right. There's too much heat on us right now.
Ha! They never stopped us before.
The kid's been through enough. She needs a break. She seems fine to me.
And I said, she needs it, do you need the break?
I said the same thing when he said that, like, I don't know. Sounds more like you need the break, man.
Yeah, it's like, do you think he needs it because of the stress or because he's being overprotective or both?
Both.
Right?
He was acting exactly like an overprotective dad.
Yes.
He reminded me of Doza.
Yeah, Captain Doza. That's right.
Yeah, exactly like that. And that is his stress.
Yes. Yeah, it's stressful trying to keep your
child safe
and alive. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yes.
It is.
I remember those days.
I wasn't being chased after bounty hunters, but raising a child, it's just as stressful. Something I really liked, too, is the description of this episode, which is the Bad Batch has their ideology challenged. So when Sid brings up the fact that they have to help a separatist senator, I just love how they were like, no, no, no. So this mission challenges their previous thoughts about the war. And I love how we continue to see these kind of different perspectives, because originally we saw it with Kanan.
Yeah.
Kanan had a specific way of thinking about the clones. His, you know, ideology, you could say, or his views at the time were changed. Rex had the same thing with the Separatists in that episode, The Last Battle. So he had a way of thinking about the Separatists and ended up working alongside the Separatists to get out of the situation with the Empire. So when you become so closed-minded,
yes,
and not seeing or accepting other people's ideologies, you tend to limit yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I really like Hunter, who seemed to just, you know, do the plan because they had to do the plan.
But at the same time, start to realize they may not be that different.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially this senator. This senator surprised me in how he wanted to help his people, how he wasn't so... Actually, it challenged my perspective, my thoughts on Separatists. I know we were introduced to Mina Bonteri and we got to see Ahsoka's perspective and learning about the Separatists and their side of the war and how they are heroes on both sides. But over time, with the constant Republic fighting against the Separatists, you can't help but fall back into that mentality that, oh, Separatists are bad.
Well, and we only get to see the trade side. What is it that they're called?
The Trade Federation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The greedy the Separatists. One.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We
yeah.
only get to see them.
And then Grievous and Dooku. So they represent the side of the war
that is all about making the money.
Yeah, making them
the profit.
Exactly. So the real Separatists are often in the shadows. And so we don't really get to see them. And this is a chance for us to see what a real Separatist is about. They're about helping their people. It was interesting as an audience viewer getting my perspective challenged and seeing the Bad Batch's ideologies challenged as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I mentioned how at first Hunter and the guys just weren't interested in helping a Separatist, but then he further elaborates to Cid privately that he doesn't want to bring Omega to a planet swarming with Imperials. So do you think Hunter made the right call in leaving Omega behind?
Not at the first.
Oh, okay.
So it's one of those things where it worked out the right way.
Right.
But I don't think he made his decision on a strong footing. He is too worried. And in doing so, he's compromising the whole group dynamic because he's not thinking properly. He's not concentrating the way that he should be concentrating. And his mind is in 20 different ways,
you know? Yeah.
And that's not good.
Mm.
So it worked out in the end because we know Omega finds her own way of helping.
Mm-hmm.
But in the moment, it was wrong. Totally wrong.
I got you. His fatherly instincts were dominating in that moment, I would say. Yeah. And I know we talked about this before, but the mission Cid gives them comes off more as an A-team type of a mission.
Yeah.
and just for those who aren't familiar with the intro, the narrator for that A-team intro says, 10 years ago, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a maximum security stockade to the Los Angeles underground. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-team. So, yeah, this is a situation where they need to hire the A-team, the space A-team. And I really love how it was giving off A-team vibes this entire episode. And so going into the mission, we have Echo, who was not happy about helping a Separatist.
Yeah.
And we know that is the case because of his history with them. You know, he was essentially, in the eyes of his comrades, killed, but he was actually taken as a prisoner of war and then made into a living computer by the Techno Union. So he has beef with them.
Most definitely. And this is the thing that this separated side is the only one that we ever got to see, except for a piece here and there.
Yes.
We only saw the evil ones.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the more twisted ones. Yeah. It was interesting to see him and then Hunter, even though Hunter's personal emotions are pulled in several different ways, like you said, he still followed through with the plan and executed the plan expertly, I think. He knew where to delegate certain tasks.
Yeah, they were in the element.
Yes.
They were fighting, and all the explosions and the troopers shooting at them, they were in their element.
Yeah.
They were working like a perfect oil machine.
Yeah,
you know?
It's so true. And Hunter assumed that they'd make it to Raxus one day. And it made me wonder what that mission would have looked like and whether it could have been eliminating the Senator, like an assassin type of way. And now that we've seen who the Senator is, how they're such a leader for his people, and them following orders, because they would have followed orders at the time. They wouldn't have questioned it. How crazy would that have been if it had been like an assassin type of mission and they had to take out the Senator? If
that would have been crazy.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm so curious how that would have gone down if things had gone the way that they were supposed to.
They probably wouldn't be GS8.
And speaking of GS8, it was just so funny to see them working with a droid instead of against droids. And I think they were confused by that, too. Like, we're so used to taking out droids. We're not used to working with them. And I love how she just kept complimenting them along the way.
she was very fascinated by like that they work so well.
And I love how she's like, "Oh, I like you." She was great.
All clear.
Impressive.
You can't possibly expect me to do that.
Just don't look down.
Nicely done!
Get this thing moving, Tech.
And Hunter lets Omega's name slip at one point, but we haven't heard him say Crosshair's name by accident. So do you think it's because she's on his mind or because he's used to having her around? And why do you think Crosshair's name hasn't slipped out accidentally in a similar way?
I think it's because he is worried.
Yeah, he's worried, right?
This is his first and foremost thought in his head. It's the thing that when he wakes up, it's what he thinks. All day, that's all he thinks. And when he goes to sleep, that's what he thinks. And probably he dreams of that.
Yeah.
It's Omega and keeping Omega safe.
Mm-hmm.
That's his priority. That's all. Everything he does is around that.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels guilty about what happened to Crosshair, but after the last encounter, I'm pretty sure he feels less guilty, and he knows Crosshair can take care of himself, but in his mind, Omega cannot, you know? So it's like, let's put this thought on the side, because I know nothing is going to change. It's going to be there. It's going to be what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Omega is what is the ever-changing, the always rocky road ahead is with her.
Yeah, it's funny because earlier in our episodes, I remember mentioning how it would be interesting to see Hunter say Crosshair's name during a mission, thinking that, you know, he's with them, telling him to go up high, but then realizing that Crosshair isn't there. And I thought we would have gotten that moment by now, but it hasn't happened.
No, it's two different worries, two different thoughts.
Yeah.
And one is a complete adult soldier who he knows can take care of himself in a position that while he feels guilty for leaving him behind, he knows he can still probably resolve. That's a problem that's not going to change. That's a problem that's going to stay the way it is.
I see.
Until it is confronted.
Right.
Omega, on the other hand, is an ever-changing problem. It could be Imperials after her. It could be a bounty hunters after her. It could be anything.
Right.
And anything can happen. And therefore, he's constantly thinking,
right,
what's going to be next? Yeah. What am I going to do next? How are we going to solve whatever comes up our way? You know?
Yeah, that makes sense. And so let's talk about Captain Bragg, who is voiced by Shelby Young. Shelby Young was the Leia of Star Wars Forces of Destiny. You know, she comes across as someone, Captain Bragg, she comes across as someone who sleeps very well at night. like the things that she does during the day
doesn't affect her.
And so I remember in Servants of the Empire, this novel series that came out when Rebels came out, there was a character, if I remember correctly, that was sort of a bully. I think he was recruited to be part of the Empire. So you have not just people who volunteer because they think that they're doing something good, but then you also have this section of people who are just naturally nasty people join the Empire. And then this is where they can thrive because this is what they enjoy doing, which is stomping on people and making themselves bigger than they seem. I feel like Captain Bragg is one of those people.
Yeah. Oh, no, definitely. And we see that everywhere and in everything. Any organization that basically gives power to a person to impose the law.
Right. As they see
gonna fits. Be at the, yeah. It's gonna have, it's gonna be a beacon for those who don't have the best of intentions.
Yes.
Because it's a legal way of them being the ugliest that they can be.
Exactly.
Which is what they love being.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the problem we have anywhere where a person is given that power.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a beacon. It's gonna attract the good ones that are gonna wanna do good, but it's also gonna attract the bad ones.
Yeah. And you know, what we mentioned earlier about them being in their element, fighting in their element, it was just so great to see Hunter slide the way that he did under the ATTE. That was just so sexy. And
and that's when I said, man, that they're in their element right now.
Like, because they did such a fantastic job and it was a successful mission.
Yeah.
Unlike other missions that they've had where it wasn't military.
Yeah.
Where they faltered.
Yeah.
Where they made mistakes. Because that isn't what they're used to. They're used to a more military strategy.
They're used to a clear cut between who is the good guy and who is the bad guy.
Yeah.
As long as they know exactly who the bad guy is, they are the good guys. Therefore, it's a fight.
Yeah.
It's a military fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it.
And it was so funny how they spent some time fixing the AT-ATE that they stole, but then they abandoned it a few seconds later. And I understand why they were in it, because there were so many clone troopers everywhere that they could have gotten shot if they had run by foot. And Brad Rao had mentioned in a previous interview, in one of the roundtable interviews, if I remember correctly, that the Bad Batch really do their best in stunning the troopers and doing everything that they can to not kill them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously they did that very differently with the droids. Droids, they would shoot, stab, you know, tear heads off, whatever. But how long do you think they'll go with this non-lethal approach? Because I feel like the moment they will have to kill clones is when Omega's in danger or if Crosshair forces them to.
I have no doubt that it will come and it's not going to be easy for them.
I don't think so, right? Because they haven't done it. And even
because the thing is that they may call them regs and whatnot, but they still the brothers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And even in Cut and Run, when Hunter comes into the area where the ship is and starts shooting at the troopers, Brad Rao said, if you look closely, he's shooting either at their leg or at their shoulder. He's not shooting in any vital areas where they can get killed. So I really love how they have that attention to detail and how they haven't really killed troopers. They've hurt them in serious ways.
But yeah.
Like record throwing
them.
They
can recover.
Yeah, like record throwing them out of the ATTE. And that's gonna hurt.
That's going to hurt tomorrow.
but yeah, they haven't really killed any of them. And it'll be interesting to see if that has to change at some point and how that's going to manifest and how that's going to affect them afterward. So, yeah. And then the senator gets to a point where he doesn't want to abandon his people. And Echo, trying to protect him, he saw how he tossed the vase. He tossed the vase at the troopers. So in trying to protect him very begrudgingly, he saw what this guy is about.
What am I doing? I cannot abandon my people. I must help them.
You will, Senator, but not if you are in Imperial custody.
She's right. Live to fight another day.
And it's very similar to a situation that happened in the Umbara arc, where there was a clone named Hardcase who went on a mission with Fives and Jesse, if I remember correctly. And unfortunately, one of them had to stay behind, and it was Hardcase. So he ends up dying in the process, but he tells his brothers, live to fight another day. And I feel like this is a thing that they all have ingrained in their heads, is that you can't do much in the moment, but do what you can to live so that you can do more later on.
And it was a great moment because it is that common ground being found between a victim of the separatists and a separatist senator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was awesome that it was him, the one who said, yes, she's right.
Live to fight another day. Yeah, and I feel like that's going to be a recurring theme, I guess you could say, moving forward, because you have to choose your battles.
Yes.
You can't fight everything. And I really love how it was Echo the one to say that.
Yeah.
And so going into the Cid and Omega part of this episode. Gosh. So I love Omega's pouting. I love how she was pouting the entire time. She looked so cute. I've never seen a kid who pouted who looked so cute. And Omega's worried about them being the Bad Batch. And to me, it went back to what she told Hunter in Battle Scars about losing them and being left alone. That's playing a part there.
Yeah, she doesn't know. She has no control. At least if she's there, she sees what is happening.
Right.
Right now, she has no idea.
Yeah. And Cid tells her, life isn't fair. Life ain't fair, kid. And she calls her helpless, which she's not. She can do what she can to defend herself, rescue herself. But Cid's reaction to Omega is what you would expect from adults. You know, yeah. You know, there are adults who tend to complain about kids and teenagers and how they're annoying. Well, adults can also be annoying. Because they can be very jaded and very cynical. And this is one of those examples.
Yeah.
Again, like on Twitter and social media, you see a lot of adults complaining about kids. And I'm like, you know what? If kids could be on here, they would be complaining about you. Boomers, all of you.
That's what I'm called.
I got called that once. My cousin called me that once, and I don't know why it was that they called me
now,
that.
They call you boomer because of your ideas, and sometimes you don't like doing certain things, and they do. So it's you're like the old one.
Yeah.
Like,
whatever.
Yeah, she's not the fun one.
Right.
And that's why they call you that.
Exactly. If Omega was a Gen Zer, she would have told Cid, you boomer. Basically.
And I love when the two guys,
Bolo and Ketch.
Yeah, they look at her like
shaking their heads.
Yeah, come on, Cid. Like, really? You told that to the girl?
Yeah, that was so funny, them shaking their heads at Cid. And Omega saying that she's good at strategy. And again, I'm very curious what her upbringing looked like and why she was taught about strategy. So we know that they want her for her genetic material, but they really, or at least Nala Se, I guess, put a lot of effort in teaching her about strategy.
She is a whole different level of clone.
Yeah.
She's not just a clone to follow orders. She's not the one that is just there to bear the brunt of the violence in front of the line in a war, in a conflict. She is more. She's definitely a more efficient, smarter more capable
clone. Yeah. And I remember asking myself, like, whether she had been taught by bounty hunters. But then I thought about how she had asked the Bad Batch, what's a bounty hunter? And you know, Tech goes about explaining what it is. So maybe they didn't say that they were bounty hunters, but I like to think that she was taught this, sort of like how the clones, in when they were being trained as cadets, sort of like how they had bounty hunters. Maybe she had bounty hunters teaching her these kinds of things to know about war and, you know, strategy and whatnot. So, yeah, I want a novel about Omega and and how it hasn't happened
there's
yet.
Also,
it's beyond me.
There's also something that is applied knowledge.
Right.
Like, you can learn something one way, but have the ability to apply that knowledge to different situations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So she could have been taught strategy through games, through different ways to apply that knowledge to real world
situations. That's true. Yeah, yeah.
It's the thing that is missing from education these days.
Right, yeah.
You go to school and they teach you a lot of cluster information. You
formulas,
have numbers here,
yeah,
and you have science here, and you have history here. And they think that by putting in reading on everything, reading math, reading science, that you are somehow connecting all these. No, you're not.
Really. Not really.
It is so sorely needed.
Right, right. So Omega, being the smart cookie that she is, asks Cid, what's my cut?
Uh-huh.
And I really love...
Oh my God, I love that part. Like, there you go.
She's so smart enough to not be swindled.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, you think you can take advantage of this kid? You have another thing coming.
Seriously. And I wonder if they'll include her strategy in the future, because we know Tech is the mind, so he knows what's what. But Omega might be included in terms of developing a plan.
Yeah, and then Goggles will be the one to basically analyze and find the most efficient way of implementing that plan.
Yeah, so sort of like how Sabine was the strategist in Rebels. And I really loved that, because here you have a 17-year-old coming up with your plans, and Kanan and Hera just, you know, let her, and they paid attention. And
yeah.
So I really want to see that with Omega. And then Omega using her skill for money, it reminded me so much of Toph in the episode The Runaway in Avatar The Last Airbender, where Toph uses her earthbending abilities to hustle people in certain games of chance. And I just thought that was so funny, because I remember telling my friend way back at the beginning of the episode of the series, where I said, you know, it'd be so cool if they use her abilities in a way that they can earn money, sort of like Toph in The Runaway. And I didn't think anything would come of that. And then you have her here.
Yeah.
Using her abilities to earn money.
And not only she earned money, she paid their debt.
She did. I really love how unexpected that was. I didn't think that's how they were going to do it. And it was so cool how it came about. And so Sid calls her a natural. And Wrecker seems so impressed. I love how he picked her up and was so in awe of what she was doing. But then Hunter comes in with his dad-like approach.
Yeah.
And, you know, he kind of
the mood.
Yeah, he reprimands her in a way. You were supposed to keep a low profile. And, you know, she drew attention to herself. So as a parent, you being the parent, do you think her paying off their debt makes it okay? Because he did say, keep a low profile, stay here in the parlor. So you as the parent, do you think her earning the money and paying off their debt makes her putting her position out there okay?
No, it does not. It is a pleasant byproduct of the whole thing. But he, in a way, he's right in being mad.
Because Hunter,
this, as they saw when they were coming in, people were running to get there.
Yeah.
It was spreading, this kid being so fabulous, you know, and that could have brought the attention of people.
A bounty hunter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he is correct in that you were told to keep a low profile. Right. This was not what you were supposed to be doing.
Right.
The fact that she is so good that she won and pay her debt is just a byproduct of it. And it's the reason why he sits in the end with her.
Right.
Without telling her, thank you.
Mm.
Without saying, that was great.
Mm-hmm.
He sits with her and finds a compromise. Okay, if you win, you'll never have to stay back.
Right. Stay out of the missions. Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of is like the compromise, the line in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say you did the right thing. I'm not going to say you did the wrong thing. But here we are.
Right.
You really paid off our debt?
I wanted to be useful, even if I couldn't go on the mission.
Hmm. How about we put those strategy skills to the test? One match. If you win, then no more sitting out on missions. You ready for this?
Are you?
It was very interesting to see how he handled the situation. And I thought I was with you. I thought he had the right way of approaching it in terms of reprimanding her a bit, but also finding that common ground.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, she could have brought attention to herself and the thing could have escalated very quickly. And I know some people are like, well, if they want to keep a low profile, why are they wearing their uniforms? Because they do stand out as soldiers of the Republic. Well, I mean, one, you have to consider the fact that this, from an out of universe perspective, they have a budget to work with and they can't keep the Bad Batch changing into different outfits because that's money. Two, from an in-universe perspective, you can say that the Bad Batch are so used to wearing their armor and feel very comfortable in wearing their armor. It's like a second skin. This is how they operate. And if you expect them to go on missions, they're going to be wearing the best of the best. Otherwise, they can... I mean, look at Hunter. He got shot in the chest, but the reason he survived was because of his armor.
There's a difference between the Bad Batch bringing attention to themselves
right.
as adults and soldiers, and Omega bringing attention to herself in a position where the Bad Batch is not there to
exactly.
help her.
Exactly, yeah.
That's very different situations. This is why I like the fact that in the end he found that line. He did not commend her for what she did. He said what he said, and he was right in saying it. This was not what you were supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But he sat with her and gave her a chance
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
win that, which is what she wants, to be with them in missions.
Yeah. So Omega, undoubtedly, she's going to win.
Yeah.
But do you think she is going to win properly because she's good? Or do you think Hunter lets her win?
No, I think she's going to win properly because
yeah.
it is also in his best interest for her not to win.
That's true.
Because this is part of what parenting is all about. You also teaching a lesson to the kid. You have to work for what you want.
Want, exactly.
It's not going to be given to you.
Uh-huh.
Number one. Number two, I am always going to be the parent. And therefore, I'm always going to have that little edge over you because of my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And those are little lessons that kids have to learn. So she may win, but she's going to know by sitting with him there that it's not because he let her and it's not because she's better than
uh-huh.
he is, but because the ability is there, because the chance was given and she was good enough at the moment to do so. But he's the leader. He's the father. He's the one who's going to say how it's going to work.
Right, right. And so Cid defends her.
Yeah.
she says that Omega did enough to pay off their debt. So do you think this is going to motivate them to move forward? Not that they've paid their debt. Do you think this is going to be a way for them to leave Cid? Or do you think they're going to keep working for Cid?
This could be the chance for them to move on. But with this mission being what it was and giving them that opportunity to be best at what they're best, it could also mean that they're gonna stay, but it could give them the upper hand into selecting, into picking the missions, that they're gonna be doing.
Yeah.
Which is what they didn't have before because they owe something.
Yeah.
But now they don't know it. They're gonna be smarter about it because now they know they're being charged for gas and everything and they repairs and whatnot that they didn't know because they're new at the game. Yeah. But now they know.
Yeah.
And because they don't have that debt, they're gonna have the opportunity to say, you know what? No, I don't like that mission. I don't believe in that. This one, yes. That's something I can
do. It could actually go back to what the Martez sisters were telling them in terms of questioning what it is that they do. So I feel like that's going to play a part alongside.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what they do next. I also love, you know, very briefly, I love how Wrecker nudged Hunter.
Like, you know.
Fixed it.
Fixed it.
You made her sad. I will not forgive you for this. You know, the fact that Omega just wanted to be useful. I feel like a lot of children her age tend to fall into that line of thinking because the adults either don't think that they're capable or don't want them to get hurt. So you have a kid who has to like rise to the occasion so that they can prove that they're useful.
And not every kid has a chance to rise to an occasion, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it's a very hard line for a parent. It's very, very difficult to keep that distance. Because as a parent, you just want to protect your kid. If you could put a bubble and have them in a bubble the rest of their lives, that's what you would do. if every time you walk through the door, I could have put you in a bubble, I would have put you in a bubble, you know?
Yeah.
It is what we do. But we have to. It is imperative that because of how much we love them, we keep that line between wanting to protect them and letting them learn and letting them grow. They have to grow. They have to learn. And if that means they get hurt, then you know what? We deal with the pain when it comes. But it has to happen. That line has to be a constant thought in your head every hour, every second of every hour of every day. It's exhausting.
Yeah, it is. And so for what comes next, where's Crosshair, Mommy?
Crosshair is stewing in his...
Yeah, I was really hoping that we'd see him this episode, especially since he had those wounds from the ion blast. So I thought, oh, maybe we'll see him in a back-to-tank healing or something like that. But no, we didn't get any Crosshair this episode. But there are 6 episodes left, Mommy, because this was the 10th episode. There are 16 episodes in total. And my math tells me that there are 6 episodes left.
Oh, yeah.
This was a great episode to just take a breath, you know, take a breather, because the past 2 episodes were really intense, but I think it's just going to pick up from here.
Yep.
Yeah. And I didn't check the trailers over to see if there was any footage, but from the last time I checked them, I don't think there's any more footage. So basically everything that happens, we have no idea what it is, what it looks like. We're just going in blind.
Sometimes that's the best way to go.
Yeah, that's true. But we do have the title for the next episode, and it's Devil's Deal.
Damn.
Right?
Ooh.
So Devil in Star Wars, Han Solo in Empire Strikes Back mentioned, you know, hell. And in Star Wars Rebels, in Zero Hour, the season 3 finale, Thrawn says, "What Jedi devilry is this?"
Yes.
And, you know, he was referring to Bendu and his mysticalness.
Powers, yes.
So devil, hell, those kind of things do exist in Star Wars. And so Devil's Deal makes you wonder, you know, when you make a pact with the devil, it's not going to lead to anything good. So is this referring to maybe the Bad Batch making a deal that they're just going to regret? Or maybe Crosshair coming to realization that the chip isn't working, but still making that deal with the Empire? I don't know.
It could be so many things. It could be that they have to do a deal with somebody we know is not a good person or something good.
Right.
You know? It has so many things, so many ways to go.
Yeah. Or it could be referring to maybe not necessarily the evil or devilish kind of thing that we're thinking of, but in Star Wars, there is a non-human humanoid species called Deveronians, and they have like this horned, yes, devil-horned look to them. So it could be that maybe we meet a Deveronian who makes a deal with them and, you know, they end up regretting it for whatever, yeah, reason. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, Devil's Deal is the next episode.
So, I am nervous. I am nervous for the next 6 episodes because there is so much. I wouldn't want it to live in a cliffhanger. I would like to at least have one resolution on the main theme.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
Even if it leaves us with an open of possibilities to come. But I don't want something like a hanging thing where we don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. And we have to wait for a new season to see what happens.
And that's the thing. We don't know. You don't know whether we're getting a second season.
So there's 6 episodes and this needs to be played out. And we have Crosshair and his ship and the Empire and Omega. Yeah. And oh my God.
Yeah, I know. I think it's going to end in a cliffhanger,
oh God,
kind of situation.
No, I don't want
just
to.
Because I feel like they are going to have a second season. They haven't really confirmed it, but that would be interesting if they do have a second season. But we'll see. And final thoughts about the episode. I really love the part where Echo is sniffing at the mentol mix. And it was just so weird. Like, why are you sniffing at it?
You wonder whether his cybernetic implants have robbed him of taste.
Maybe.
So the only way he can is by smelling it or something, you know, like.
Or maybe he was just skeptical about
what it is. Why does it make you so happy?
Yeah, or eating like eating food from the street, you know, like, ew. I love how Cid called Hunter Bandana. I love her nicknames for everyone.
Tall, dark, and broody.
Yeah. I really want her to. It'd be so cool if Star Wars did videos where they would have the actor, Rhea Perlman, you know, looking at characters from across the Star Wars saga and her just giving them nicknames as Cid. I was just like, how do we not have this promotional video footage how does this not exist? And, you know, we talked about how the planet was gorgeous. Yes. It was so beautiful. I really loved the foliage and it looked like a fairy tale story, which is really such a sharp contrast to the war-torn planets,
yep,
across the universe that have suffered because of the Separatists and Republic war. So it's interesting to see the home of the Separatists. It's interesting to see the home of the Republic, Coruscant, living their lives like nothing's happening, like the world, like
the rest of the universe suffers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, and then all the wine bottles in that cellar that they had the senator in reminded me of you. Like,
yes,
you wanting to taste all the space wine.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
With all the space cheeses.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really loved the fanciness of the glass.
Yes.
It was very space-like, Star Wars-like. And Omega scrubbing at the
bar.
The bar. I was like, you need to scrub harder. I still see the grime.
Yeah. It came to my mind and said, what are you doing? You have to put your elbow into it.
And I love how Cid told Hunter that he shouldn't trust her. Like, she flat out told him, you know what, you shouldn't trust me. But I think her experience with Omega is going to keep them on her good side. So I remember before I was like, I don't know. I don't really trust her. I don't know what she's going to do. So I think this, what happened in this episode is going to, if anything were to happen where Cid had to turn them over, I don't think she would. At least for Omega, for Omega's sake.
I don't know. I still see it being able to go either way.
Oh, okay then. And did you have any more thoughts about the episode?
All my odd was with the cinematography.
Yeah.
It was like, damn.
That was so beautiful.
So gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. The lighting, the artistry, everything was beautiful. And that's it for today's episode. The next time you hear from us, we'll be talking about the 11th episode of The Bad Batch. But before then, where can listeners find you, Mommy?
Listeners can find me on Twitter with the handle at Hubian214.
And listeners can find me on Twitter with the handle at BlueJayGuys and Geeky Bubble with the handle at GeekyBubblePod. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do so by emailing geekybubblepodcast@gmail.com.
And may the force be with you.
Always.